Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for them, because we have this Christopher Wolf. He is a professor of political science at Marquette University and president of the American Public Philosophy Institute. And he has, of course, put together a book with not only his own thoughts, but, of course, essays by a number of other very thoughtful authors. His book is Safe Sex Matters, edited by Christopher Wolf. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Okay, just for the record, it's Same Sex Matters. I'm not into same sex.
All right, Same Sex Matters, edited by Christopher Wolf, The Challenge of Homosexuality. And of course, we hear so much about homosexuality, and yet I think what's happened is everything has gotten so confused that people can't see the forest for the trees. Do you sometimes have that thought as you address these issues?
Of course. I mean, one of the really serious problems is that there are an awful lot of attitudes that are promoted by the media that I think are inaccurate. Certainly, one of the key issues is the cause of homosexuality, and a lot of Americans have come to believe that homosexuality is somehow hardwired, that it's genetically or biologically based, and that therefore the only way these people can achieve sexual gratification, and of course it's assumed that everybody has a right to that, is by homosexual activity. And I think that's fundamentally a misunderstanding of the problem.
All right, fine. Well, of course, you use the analogy of alcoholism. Certainly, when we deal with people who are homosexuals, we shouldn't hate homosexuals, although anybody who seems to oppose the homosexual agenda is accused of being a hater. But you use the analogy of a person with alcoholism, and if you really care about them, you're going to tell them what you're doing is wrong. Would you like to sort of develop that idea? Because I thought that you did such a great job of that in your discussion.
Well, I think it's really key to understand that the people who are opposed to legitimizing homosexuality don't do it out of any animus against homosexuals, any bigotry. Even the Supreme Court has gone so far as to suggest that that's the case. But the fact of the matter is that I think those who oppose legitimizing homosexuality are really the people who have a true compassion in this area, because they're trying to prevent people from getting into a lifestyle that's likely to lead to a lot of unhappiness, that it's even on just a physical level is a pretty serious problem, but that it is also something that undermines the institution of marriage, which is so central for society. And so I think it's really important that we come to a better understanding of what exactly homosexuality is and the truly compassionate way to deal with it.
And, of course, you use the analogy. Certainly you wouldn't want to tell an alcoholic it's all right to go ahead and do what you're doing, even though the alcoholic may very well have to struggle with what he's doing. If you care about him, you're going to do everything you can to try to get him out of this destructive lifestyle.
I think that's it is a very good analogy. I mean, obviously, no analogy works perfectly, and there are some differences between alcoholism and homosexuality. Nobody's arguing that they're simply equivalent. But it's striking how often there are similarities, and very often if you ask yourself...
Hold that thought right there.
Sure thing.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Professor Christopher Wolfe. He's a professor at Marquette University, and he has put together a book. He didn't write the whole thing, although he writes an essay in this, and he edited it and brought in a number of very astute writers on the issue of homosexuality. And the title of his book is Same Sex Matters, the Challenge of Homosexuality, and how we should really try to address this. And what they have done very effectively is they've seized the initiative, and of course I should point out that the power of the homosexual, in my estimation, has never been their own power. It has been the power of the people who control the media, the power of the people who control the great tax-exempt foundations, the power of the people who control many of our great corporations, what we would sometimes refer to as the establishment, and they really have, of course, in my estimation, popularized the homosexual position, and I really believe, of course, are using the homosexuals for another political agenda. But be that as it may, Professor Wolfe has actually, of course, used a number of analogies here, and one we were talking about was the analogy of homosexuality and alcoholism. Not exact, but of course, both are situations. Both are very hard to get over, but certainly, in both instances, why? Certainly, are we kind to people by saying, go ahead and be an alcoholic? Are we kind to a homosexual who says, go ahead and be a homosexual? What are the health implications that you bring out so well in your book of homosexuality?
Well, the health implications are very substantial. I mean, some of the really good work on this has been done by Dr. Jeff Satinover, a fellow and psychiatrist at Yale, and quite a brilliant guy who wrote an essay for the first of our volumes on homosexuality, which was called Homosexuality in American Public Life. And he just analyzes especially the details and the medical implications of anal intercourse. And this is just not a natural human activity, and it's fraught with all kinds of dangers, not just AIDS. I mean, that's the one most people think of, and it's certainly a significant one. But it's not simply AIDS. It's many other things as well. And the result is that it appears that homosexual men in particular have life expectancies far shorter than heterosexuals. There have been some studies on this, and we're talking not about years shorter, but decades shorter.
And you point out 25 to 30 years on average, less life. I mean, the average homosexual dies, what, about 40, 41, 42. This is certainly shows that there's something very definitely different between the two lifestyles. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Professor Christopher Wolfe. We're talking about his book, Same Sex Matters, The Challenge of Homosexuality. And, of course, how should we think about homosexuality? Should we hate homosexuals? Of course not. I mean, I don't know anybody who hates them except maybe Pastor Fred Phelps down there and somewhere in the Midwest who goes around picketing everybody. But, you know, if you're really concerned about people, you would want to try to stop them from being involved in a destructive lifestyle. And, you know, what most people never want to talk about is over a quarter of a million homosexuals have died of AIDS, and most of them got that disease because of what they did. And what they do is physiologically wrong. It's a certainly spreads disease. And as Professor Wolfe was pointing out, why the lifespan of homosexuals is much shorter. And in his book, he quotes that somewhere between 25 and 30 years will be taken off the life of a young person who enters this lifestyle. I mean, if you believe in population control, it's a very, very effective means of doing it. But if you're compassionate about the people, wouldn't you want to try to tell them that they shouldn't do it? Would you like to sort of develop the rest of this idea about the analogy between homosexuality and the alcoholic existence and our obligation to try to discourage alcoholism?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you were confronted with somebody in your family who was an alcoholic, you would try to persuade them that this was a kind of life that would really undermine a good existence, the well-being of your friend, your family member, and you try to help them to change as much as possible.
And yet we're told, well, we really shouldn't try to get people to change. In fact, we ought to do everything to start in kindergarten to teach our kids this is an acceptable lifestyle.
Well, that's very unfortunate, and that so many teens, especially, who may be going through some kind of, you know, ordinary crisis of sexual identity, are now being latched onto and encouraged to experiment with homosexual activity, or maybe even to think of themselves as defined by some kind of homosexual identity. And the result is that they head down into that kind of lifestyle in a way that's likely to really harm them, as well as harming society. It's really important that we understand that homosexuality is not an identity, that people aren't defined by their sexual inclinations, that these inclinations may be very deeply rooted. I mean, nobody should deny that. I mean, these are not simply attractions that are freely chosen or lightly assumed. I mean, the homosexual inclinations have rather deep roots in a person's psychology, going back to, I think, mostly early childhood experiences. But at the same time, we have some persuasive evidence that suggests that if people are committed to change, the change really is possible for many of them. And for those people for whom change is not possible, a chaste life is going to be the best way to go.
Well, certainly, is there any instance in all history where, of course, society has accepted homosexuality, where that society hasn't been destroyed?
Well, it's awfully tough to even talk about homosexuality as a general category. I mean, people are always talking about that, you know, the supposed fact that homosexuality was accepted in ancient Greece, to take an example. But in fact, the whole understanding of homosexuality is, of course, quite different. It's a relatively modern notion that people are somehow born with a sexual identity involving same-sex attractions, and that somehow they're kind of locked into that. In ancient societies, it was certainly true that people engaged in homosexual activity as a kind of phase or stage. It was almost a kind of mentoring stage for certain Greek youth. But then they'd, at the end of the stage, they'd settle down and have a heterosexual marriage, and there was no notion that this was somehow an identity that locked them into one particular kind of sexual existence. And so, often when these historical incidents are cited, they're misused. You just don't have societies, I think, where homosexuality, understood as it's proclaimed today in the late 20th and early 21st century as actually constituting a person's identity, you just don't see that really before the 19th century.
Well, don't you think that this push for homosexuality goes right along with the effort to legitimize and actually encourage a promiscuous heterosexual sexuality? In other words, we see a total breakdown of the moral structure of our society, both as far as homosexuality, as far as heterosexuality is concerned, and the breakdown of the family and the corruption of our children and the spread of diseases like on a scale undreamed of. When I was a physician going to medical school, we had five sexually transmitted diseases. Now we have, close to 20 of them. And this is a direct byproduct of this whole moral degeneracy of our society. And certainly it's not only homosexuality, but heterosexuality, which has become degenerate.
Yeah, when I speak on homosexuality, one thing I always try to make a major point about is the fact that it's not homosexuality by itself that's threatening marriage today and our mores. That in fact, homosexuality is simply the latest, the most recent kind of logical culmination of trends that began with heterosexuality. And in particular, I think, it gets traced back to things like no-fault divorce and contraception, where I think you had a real transformation in the whole notion of sexuality, especially in the 1960s, when all of a sudden sex was detached from procreation and then detached from marriage and became a kind of independent activity of its own without any essential relationship to children or marriage. And given the fact that homosexuals constitute only a very small percentage of society, it's really what goes on in heterosexual morality that's going to have the much more profound effect on our culture and society. And I think homosexuals have something of a legitimate gripe when they say that, some conservatives go around, blaming sexual problems on homosexuals, when in fact the argument for homosexuality is really only, you know, working out logically a certain kind of contemporary attitude toward heterosexuality.
Well, do you see a spiritual component to this total breakdown of sexual morality and sexual mores in our society? Is there a spiritual force behind this?
Well, you know, yeah, I think there is, and you know, especially those of us who are Christians certainly believe in original sin, and even if you're not Christian, you can certainly just look at human nature and see that there are kind of forces pulling human beings in quite different directions, and some of those forces are unfortunate and can lead us to harm. I mean, you know, one good example is that, you know, we have a very natural desire to eat things, but on the other hand, if we eat too much, we can really cause ourselves from some pretty significant damage, as in fact so many obese Americans are doing. Well, likewise, we have an inclination to engage in sexual activity, which is a, you know, a wonderful thing in itself, but of course, if it's channeled in the wrong direction and misused, it can cause terrible damage to people. And the problem is that this is an extremely powerful force in human nature, and it needs some kind of direction. And that means it needs social supports, and I think also spiritual supports as well. And in the absence of those, it's not very surprising that the sexual inclination is going to be abused and lead us in directions that are very harmful. And especially when you throw in the fact that, you know, with the 1960s and the development of contraception, that one of the major traditional barriers to unrestricted sexual activity, which was the very close tie between sex and pregnancy before that time, when you take into consideration that that's been removed, it's not too surprising to see what's happened in the last 40 years.
Well, because one of the things that's really disturbing to me is that the homosexuality of many of the Catholic priests is going to end up bankrupting the Catholic Church and driving many Catholics away from their traditional Christian faith. Are you concerned about that?
Sure. I'm much less concerned about the bankruptcy, which actually might not be such a bad thing in some ways. I'm very concerned about the fact that this is leading many people to have a deep distrust of the priesthood and of the Church. And there's no question that the bishops in the United States, many of them, not all of them, did not handle this question very well, that they kind of went into a defense mode. And the result is that there is a lot of distrust out there, and that's quite understandable. And we really have to somehow get back to confronting the issue straightforwardly. And another problem, frankly, is that many people have tried to portray this as a problem with pedophilia, and it's not primarily a problem with pedophilia. The instances of pedophilia in the clerical abuse issue has been very, very infrequent. Overwhelmingly, what we're talking about is instances of homosexuality, that is, where you have young but post-pubescent boys being preyed on by some priests, and that ought to be understood more clearly and responded to.
Yeah, well, of course, the thing was that this was reported. I know my Catholic friends were trying to report it to the local bishop, and they were ridiculed, they were attacked, they were vilified for daring to talk about this. And now this whole thing has come back and really, of course, has shaken the faith of so many people. I can't believe that this simply happens by accident. There has to be spiritual forces at work that are doing everything they can to destroy the Protestant Church, to destroy the Catholic Church. And we see this in a recent report from one of the largest television networks. Of course, it was shut up very, very quickly. One of the leaders of one of the largest Protestant television networks was pointed out to have paid off a homosexual person not once but several times to silence them, and of course the average person just ignores that. Same problem with the Catholic Church. We're going to be back in just a moment here to continue our discussion. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763. Or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Professor Christopher Wolf of Marquette University. We're talking about his book, Same Sex Matters. And, of course, we were talking about, really, nobody ever wants to talk about the fact that homosexuals, on average, live 25 to 30 years less than the average individual. The average homosexual dies about 40 or 41 today. And one of the most interesting things that is never discussed is the fact that 1 in 3 lesbians gets breast carcinoma, and I've got this from homosexual magazines and from other sources as well. So this is well known, but the media and the educational system and the great foundations and the corporations and certainly the homosexual community cover this up because they want to recruit new people into their lifestyle, and they're actively recruiting. They're recruiting them in our schools, and they're really doing a pretty good job in our schools, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't know if it's so much a question of recruiting as I suggested earlier. It's this idea of catching people at a vulnerable age and making them perhaps think that they have this natural inclination to some kind of homosexual identity. And that's really unfortunate because it's certainly true that a lot of kids do go through some period of sexual questioning, and it doesn't at all mean that they're homosexual. But if somebody comes up and says, listen, this really shows that you're a homosexual, and what you really have to do is kind of come out of the closet and proclaim that you're in fact a homosexual, it can really lead them astray, which is very unfortunate. The actual incidence of homosexuality in the population doesn't seem to be very large. You're probably talking 2-3% of the population, although there are more people who experiment with it briefly in adolescence. And it's especially those people, I think, who are at risk for being persuaded to adopt a more stable homosexual orientation. And that's what we have to try to prevent, I think, really let people know the true facts about this issue.
Well, I remember when they were speaking down at our local high school, and they were passing out these flyers saying, try it, you may like it. Maybe you don't think that's recruiting, but I think that there really are people who would like, of course, to get more people into this lifestyle because they claim it's completely normal. Now, one of the things in your book, you actually have an article by a woman who was a lesbian. Would you like to talk a little bit about that and her transformation?
Yeah, it's really quite an amazing story, and this is just one of many stories that are quite similar. We get somebody who's had a typical, you know, situation growing up where there's, you know, severe family problems, in the case of lesbianism, alcoholism, and especially a very distant father. Alcoholic father is a very frequent event in the formation of a lesbian orientation. And, you know, Jane Boyer really kind of came to grips with it and came to understand the problems that are built into, that are at the very heart of lesbian relationships, because what she found is that this desire to achieve fulfillment through lesbian relationships was in fact something that really was an obstacle to happiness, not a means to attain it. And so, you know, she went through this very kind of wrenching, difficult process, a kind of spiritual renewal, to try to cast off that sexual identity, and in fact succeeded and is now very active in the ex-gay ministry and trying to help other people. And as I say, this is not just Jane's story, it's very many other people as well. And it's so important for people to know that there are those examples out there, that there's some hope for changing a homosexual identity, and especially, of course, the younger you catch people and the less they've kind of developed the habits of that lifestyle, the more likely you are to help them prevent that formation or to come out of it as well as they can.
But there's a very definite effort to convince the American people and to convince homosexuals that you're born that way, you can't change, that nobody ever changed, and it's almost a criminal activity to try to get anybody out of the lifestyle, to try to lure them away from what they are normally. How do you respond when people use that sort of an argument?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at people in the American Psychological Association, there actually have been efforts to have psychologists who help people change declared to be in violation of professional ethics. And it's interesting to see that one of the guys who actually helped take homosexuality out of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatry, a guy named Robert Spitzer, was kind of intrigued when he met some ex-gays outside demonstrating outside a psychological association meeting, and so he actually engaged in a study to see whether or not it really was possible to change a homosexual orientation. And he still is not opposed to homosexuality in principle. He came out with this article that says that in fact it's possible.
Most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been the secret societies. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Hi, I'm Michael Anthony Perucchi, the Constitution Party's president.
Have you ever wondered whether you're really getting the truth from the media? Have you ever thought that maybe somebody's controlling your reality? Well, there's going to be a meeting. It's going to be held at the Westin Hotel over by Great America. It's going to be on May 28th and 29th, and it's going to be at the Conspiracy Conference. Now, if you'd like to know more about the Conspiracy Conference, call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. This is the fifth exciting year they've had this. Dick Gregory is going to be there, Nick Begich. There's going to be Daniel Hopsicker, Jack McLam. I'm going to have a booth, although I'll not be speaking. You're going to see the contrast between good and evil. The Conspiracy Conference is a great educational opportunity. We hope that many of you will give serious consideration to going May 28th, 29th. That's 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this afternoon is Professor Christopher Wolfe. His book, Same Sex Matters, and our telephone number, if you're out there in the listening audience, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. We were talking about this idea that, you know, you just can't change. You're born this way, or there's just no way out of it. And yet, of course, there are many instances where people have been able to leave the lifestyle, although they are viciously attacked and demonized by people within the lifestyle for daring to leave. And Professor Wolf was talking about one of the men on the American Psychiatric or Psychological Association who was instrumental in, of course, saying that homosexuality was perfectly normal, or at least taking it out of this grouping of diseases and saying it was perfectly normal. And he was quite interested to find out that there really are many, many people who have left the lifestyle. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's exactly what he found out. That now, of course, he does say that, and I think it's true, that this depends on a real commitment of the person to try to get out of it. I want to stress that this is not something you put on and take off like a coat. We're talking about really deep-seated features of a psychology, but it is possible, and that's one reason why very often some kind of spiritual assistance really is helpful. That there are a number of programs that use something like the Alcoholics Anonymous program in order to help people overcome these inclinations. And Spitzer, as I say, is somebody who still, in general, is in favor of homosexual rights. He's not a conservative by any means, and yet he's an honest scientist, and he was willing to actually look at the issue and was able to discover that, in fact, it is possible to change. And he also argues that if people want to change, they should be permitted to try to do so, and that it would be quite wrong to try to punish psychiatrists who provided their clients with precisely what they wanted.
And yet there's a very definite effort to do that, to punish the psychiatrists and psychologists who are trying to help the people leave this lifestyle. Isn't that sort of madness, especially considering the fact that this really leads to an early death in so many people?
Yeah, I mean, it really is extremely unfair and very inconsistent and hypocritical as well, because generally on the other side, their whole argument is that people should be free to live the lifestyle that they want to live. But then in this case, when you have somebody who actually wants to get out of the homosexual lifestyle and goes to a psychiatrist and asks for help, now they want to have that psychiatrist declared to be acting unethically if he actually responds to his client's declared wish to try to leave that lifestyle.
Well, were they able to get that position through?
No, they haven't succeeded in getting that declared to be unethical. There have been efforts to do so, but at least so far, it's generally been fended off. But this is something that is not just, you know, a fringe kind of activity. I mean, this is something that many of the mainstream psychiatrists who are pushing for the agenda of legitimizing homosexuality are trying to push through our association.
But of course what they do is they yell and scream and they fuss and I've been to some of the international AIDS conferences, and what they have effectively done, the AIDS activists, and I don't hear the responsible members of the gay community speaking out, the AIDS activists have blocked an effective public health approach to stopping an epidemic that has killed 500,000 Americans, infected almost another million, killed, you know, well over 20 million people throughout the world, and another 40 million are going to die of this disease. And this can be laid directly at the door of the homosexual activists and the people who back them, because they've prevented an effective public health policy. You have in your book a chapter by my good friend Shepard Smith. Would you want to address that issue? Because this, what people do when they become active in the political sphere in an effort to justify their lifestyle, and they're killing other people as a result of it, because this is a totally unnecessary epidemic. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I think there's no question that AIDS has been treated differently because homosexual activists have demanded that it be treated differently. It's clearly a major public health program problem. And when you have other programs that are similar, especially to sexually transmitted diseases, there are relatively well-established methods for dealing with the problem, especially contact tracing. And in this particular case, that has been prevented because some people think that it might undermine the efforts to legitimize homosexuality. And so that's very unfortunate, and it means that the problem is much worse than it might otherwise be.
In fact, if you really wanted to kill off a large number of homosexuals, you would handle the epidemic exactly the way we handle it here in America. That's a terrible thought, but it crossed my mind a number of times when I was involved in the battle trying to save human lives, and found at every turn, every effort to do what was logical was blocked. Well, now some of the other things that you cover in your book, would you like to, of course, one of the important things that you would really like to our listeners to remember about this subject that you've covered so well?
Well, I mean, let me mention one thing, which is that your listeners can get the book for a good discount, usually 50% discount, if they call the number at Spence Publishing and mention that they heard it on your show.
Yes.
The number is 1-888-773-6782. They can also go to the website, which is www.spencepublishing.com. And I think that the key thing to say is that people on our side really need to educate themselves about these issues. They have to be able to respond to the very frequent misperceptions that exist in society, and in particular, you know, things like the argument that this is genetically or biologically determined, that it can't be changed, or that even the general idea that somehow every person has a right to sexual gratification. I mean, sex is not a right. I mean, sex is something that's connected with a very important function in human life, which is especially its marriage and bringing children into the world. And it's not, you know, just a kind of an activity that you engage in for pleasure and fun.
Well, you might think that, though, if you watch any of the sitcoms on television today, if you watch so many of our movies that are being programmed into the minds of our children, that there's no sense of a sexual morality of responsibility. You know, it's just top from bed to bed. What impact does that have on our young people? That must just give them entirely the wrong message about life-term commitments and loyalty and morality and doing the right thing in God?
Yeah, I mean, I often think of this fact. I ask my students to think about it. Think of all the different kinds of images of sexuality you've seen in your first 20 years of life, and ask yourself, out of all those images of sexuality, what percentage have connected it in any way with having children? You know, and it's got to be 1%. You know, in fact, there's this constant stream of sexual images in our society, and almost completely unattached to the idea of marriage or children. And so it's not surprising when kids are subjected to that kind of, propaganda, that they, you know, come away with distorted views of what sex is all about. And unfortunately, it leads to a tremendous amount of unhappiness, I think.
Well, of course, and half of our marriages are ending in divorce, and of course, that's the ones who get married, so we have so many young people. We used to call it living in sin, and now it's quite accepted, you know, this is the way that things are done. And it wasn't the way things were done 50 years ago. It was wrong 50 years ago. It's still wrong today because it violates God's law. And when a society turns against God's law, why, that society is laying itself open for terrible, terrible consequences, I believe. What are your thoughts?
I think it's absolutely true. We're made with a kind of design built into us. And I think we have to make arguments on several levels. I mean, first of all, we have to really remind people what the message of Christianity is and talk about the fact that, Revelation makes it very clear that this kind of homosexual activity is very wrong. In addition, and especially when we're trying to speak to many of our fellow citizens who don't share our religious beliefs, we also have to make articulate and strong natural law arguments on this subject as well. But even if you don't believe in religion, if you look at human nature and you look at its structure, its design, it's clear that sex has a purpose, that it's not just for anything. That it's oriented especially toward marriage and children, and it's very unfortunate that design that's built into human beings is increasingly just put to the side as a kind of an optional way of life if you happen to prefer a different one.
Well, of course, in other cultures, why, for instance, the Latin culture, why girls aren't even allowed to go out with boys until, without being chaperoned. Whereas here we give a total license to our young people, and then we wonder why they act irresponsibly. And, of course, the other thing is, of course, as far as homosexuality is concerned, so much of what we see on television today tells us it's perfectly normal, and then we see this planned propaganda program that comes on in the breaks and they say, oh, you shouldn't hate, oh, we don't want you to hate. Well, nobody's suggesting anybody hate homosexuals, but I would think if you cared about homosexuals, you would tell them what you're doing is going to kill you. And have you ever seen a television ad that said that on television? We would tell people not to use drugs. We would tell people not to use alcohol. We would tell people not to drive under the influence of alcohol. But have you ever seen a television program that said that homosexuality was wrong?
Unfortunately, we have this problem that the media elite are generally a group of people who are driven by a particular ideology. In another book I edited, Robert Lerner and Althea Nagay published a piece that talks about the way the media are committed to what they call the ideology of expressive individualism. And the result is that they have profoundly different attitudes on many subjects. They tend to be extremely irreligious. 90% of them don't go to religious services. On questions of sexual morality, they're you know, overwhelmingly in favor of abortion on demand, homosexual rights. And one question that really, really struck me a couple of years ago when I saw this data was that when they were presented with the statement, adultery is wrong, 50% of the media elite said that they either disagreed or strongly disagreed with that statement. And that's just so different from what ordinary Americans think. And yet because they have the levers of public opinion, they control the means of social communication, they can have a big impact. And many people just get the sense that they're kind of alone in this small minority that's different from everybody else.
I think that the average individual is very concerned about what's going on. I think the average individual still retains some of those moral values, and even a lot of the victims of our current educational system and our colleges have come around to realize that sexual activity, the license for sexual activity is a license for tragedy and unhappiness. Well, let's go to Roger, who's calling us from Pennsylvania. Roger, you're there.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about, you mentioned about pushing this on the media, which they project this false image of rough behavioral lifestyle equivalence, say, between the hetero and homosexual lifestyle. And I wanted to ask, as Bruce Cameron, I believe, of the Family Research Institute pointed out, that those unpartnered homosexuals are averaged some 22-some partners per year, whereas the partnered ones, supposedly the committed, loving, committed relationships, they bring the number way down to a low 7 to 8 partners a year. Now I'm thinking.
Well, let's get Christopher, Professor Wolf's response to that. I'm sure you understand what Roger is saying. Much of what we hear about this close, committed relationships in homosexuals really isn't true. That there's something almost a sexual compulsion which is part of the lifestyle. Would you like to comment on that?
I think it is a compulsion for many of them. One thing that was very striking to me a few years ago was that. Andrew Sullivan has written a book called Virtually Normal, in which he makes a very strong effort to try to convince Americans that homosexual marriage is a good thing, that we should want homosexuals to have these stable relationships. And that, as these homosexual advocates go, Sullivan is generally among the more moderate of them. But even Sullivan, it turns out at the end of his book, says, well, homosexuals have something to learn from heterosexuals, namely that this stability in a committed relationship is a good thing. Heterosexuals have something to learn from homosexuals as well, and that is that monogamy, by which he means that committed relationship, is really compatible with extramarital sexual activity. That we shouldn't be so heterosexuals shouldn't be so hung up on strict fidelity to one partner. And if even a moderate person says that, it's really striking. You can imagine what the less moderate ones say.
Okay, anything else, Roger?
That sounded like a swell oxymoron. God bless you.
Thanks very much. And, of course, this is really the problem that I see here, is because the homosexual lifestyle is being used to push illicit sex, to encourage sexuality, to focus our attention on sexuality, and to break down the moral fabric of the heterosexual community. And I think they're doing a great job of it.
Yeah.
I believe they got a lot of help, of course, through the media and through our educational system and our great tax-exempt foundations. But, certainly there is a definite, I believe there's a spiritual component to this whole thing. I believe the morality of this country is under attack. And I also believe that you destroy the morality of a nation, you destroy that nation. So what are your parting thoughts for our listeners? We've got about 2 minutes before I let you go.
I mean, the key thing we have to understand is that sex is deeply intertwined with marriage, that single committed relationship with one other person for a lifetime, and with the children that flow from that marriage relationship. And once we detach sex from marriage and from children, we shouldn't be surprised to see that it becomes a kind of end in itself and something that really is very little regulated. And that, in fact, is used in a way that undermines these very fundamental social institutions of family and marriage. And so we have to educate ourselves. We have to get out into the public sphere and make arguments, arguments based on religion, but also arguments based on reason as well, to try to reach people so that they can understand that there is another side. What the media is presenting is not the only side of this issue. And if we educate ourselves and throw ourselves into it, we can have an impact. I mean, right now, frankly, the key battle is the Federal Marriage Amendment. You know, that this is an opportunity for us to really make the point that marriage is a very special relationship. It's not just about loving, committed people, but it's about this much more fundamental social institution, which is what helps society to endure over time.
Oh, well, we're going to have to let you go because we're out of time, but our guest has been Professor Christopher Wolfe. The book, Same Sex Matters. What's the telephone number one more time?
It's 1-888-773-6782.
Bye-bye, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our four tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and to really understand this whole issue, you have to understand there's been a coordinated effort to destroy the morality of our country. And this was largely funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, and of course funneling money to Alfred Kinsey, who himself was a homosexual, who was a masochist, who purpose specifically to destroy the moral fabric of our society, and funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. You need to get the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence. This book has been actively suppressed in America for 50 years. It was actually written in 1958, well, I guess about 45 years, written in 58 by the Council for the only congressional committee ever allowed to investigate the great tax-exempt foundations, and that was the Reese Committee. And in the foreword of that book, Congressman Reese said, "The purpose of our investigation was to find out what part the Great Tax Exempt Foundation for playing in pushing a Marxist philosophy and trying to destroy the love which every person, American, should have for his way of life, for our way of life." The book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, is available from Radio Liberty. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You need to get the book. You need to understand that the great foundations were pushing communism and socialism. And, yes, the funding of Alfred Kinsey and the Kinsey effort to destroy the moral fabric of our society, they knew exactly what they were doing. Because behind this movement is strong spiritual forces intent upon destroying a once great Christian nation. We have a wonderful four-tape set. There's nothing quite like it. It's called Kinsey. And, of course, it's my interviews with Judith Reisman, who had done the fundamental work on Alfred Kinsey, Colonel Ron Ray, former Assistant Secretary of Defense during the Reagan administration, with James Jones, who wrote the classic book on the Alfred Kinsey, the biography. And you need to understand that what is happening today is really all intended. They're pushing moral depravity. So the four-tape set on Kinsey is something that everybody who's concerned about the subject we're talking about needs to have. There's nothing quite like it, or as well as so many of the other four-tape sets we have here in America. If you don't believe that there is a genocidal agenda, you need to get our four-tape set on Tuskegee. The Tuskegee study was a plan to kill a number of blacks, 400 black men. They were recruited, they had syphilis, and for 40 years between 1931 and 1971, treatment was intentionally withheld so they would die, so they could be biopsied by the scientists. Oh, these scientists who were so concerned about wanting to see how the syphilis would ravage the bodies of black men. They'd already done studies on white men. They wanted to do this study here. It is one of the most incredible four-tape sets we have. People don't like, of course, to understand that we have scientists here in this country, professors in medical schools who see nothing wrong with killing patients. That's what Terry Schiavo is all about. We have experts who will get up and say there's nothing wrong with killing people. Oh, well, Terry, after all, she's in persistent vegetative state. Well, these black men were not in a persistent vegetative state, and everything was done to block their getting treatment. And no one was ever held responsible. The four-tape set on Tuskegee, the four-tape set on Kinsey, the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then we ask you to go to our website, radioliberty.com. Tell others about our programs. And incidentally, as we mentioned in the last hour, the shortwave broadcast for this program is going to change as of the April 4th. It will be heard on 11.515. Our evening program will be heard at 58.35 on one channel. And it's 74.65 on the other. That's 74.65. Remember our website, radioliberty.com. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. And then pray for America. And ask yourself, would God really bless a country that, like ours? It's time to take America back. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.